Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 423 for May 4th, 2013. Coming up in a few minutes.
I still got a lot of life and a lot of kicks in me still. But essentially, as you reach into the 60s and the early 60s, you have to take it on board that you're not going to be here forever. As in all things, in all ways of life, families have different views. And my brother and I had different views as to the way forward.
Stuart and Fred Lang inherited Douglas Lang & Company from their father, Fred, who founded it back in 1948. This week they officially ended their 40-plus year partnership and split the company in two. More on that in a moment. But later on WhiskeyCast In Depth, we'll hear from both brothers on the reasons for the split and why they're both full of new life and ideas now. I'll also have the calendar of events, and since it's Kentucky Derby weekend, I'll have some bourbons in the What I'm Tasting This Week department, all on this week's episode of Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start off with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Of course, the biggest news of the week was the split between the Lang brothers. It had been rumored for weeks, but the deal didn't officially close until the final contracts were signed on Tuesday. Fred Lang will keep the Douglas Lang Company name, along with half of the company's assets, brands like Providence and Big Pete, and whiskey stocks. As I mentioned several weeks ago, his daughter Kara is joining the company as head of brands marketing after several years at Morrison Bowmore and White & Mackay before that. Meanwhile, Stuart Lang has taken his half, including the company's bottling hall, and formed Hunter Lang & Company along with his sons Scott and Andrew. They're merging their own Edition Spirits company into Hunter Lang, which will now own the Old Malt Cask and Old & Rare Single Malt brands, along with several other key brands. As you'll hear later on WhiskeyCast In Depth, both brothers are already working on several new whiskey brands that will debut later this year. In other news, Kentucky's bourbon distillers had their busiest year in nearly four decades during 2012. Figures released this week by the Kentucky Distillers Association show the state's distilleries filled more than 1 million barrels last year, 1,007,703 to be exact. That's the most since 1973. There are nearly 5 million barrels of whiskey aging in the state's rickhouses. On that note, Buffalo Trace is releasing the ninth batch of Single Oak Project bourbons. The project is designed to see what variables affect the maturation of a bourbon. The 12 barrels in this batch were all produced at the same entry proof, filled into barrels with the same char level, and kept in the same warehouse. The differences are the recipe, either rye or wheat-based, the size of the wood grain in the barrel staves, and whether the wood came from the top or bottom half of the tree. The latest batch will be available later this month in limited quantities. Earlier this year, we got the sad news that Parker Beam of Heaven Hill had been diagnosed with ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. He is still working as his health allows him to, and Heaven Hill has pledged to donate $20 from each bottle of this year's Parker's Heritage Collection whiskey to the ALS Association. The original goal was to raise $250,000 for Parker Beam's Promise of Hope Fund, but Larry Cass of Heaven Hill told me that's likely to be just the start.
We've had just a tremendous reaction from our distributor partners when we're telling them what we're planning on doing for Parker's new edition. And as a matter of fact, several of them have either offered to make significant monetary contributions or to donate part of their own profits on this thing to the Parker's Promise of Hope Fund. So it's really been a great reaction all around from our partners.
And how's Parker doing?
He's doing fine. I mean, he's a tough old bird, and he's continuing to make it along.
This year's Parker's Heritage Collection whiskey is still a mystery. Expect an announcement sometime in August in time for sales to begin around the Kentucky Bourbon Festival in mid-September. Beam reported its first quarter earnings this week, and the Maker's Mark controversy turned out to be a very profitable move, at least for now. The company's overall profits for the quarter were up 22.6% from a year ago, largely on a 44% increase in Maker's Mark sales. CEO Matt Shattuck told Wall Street analysts the increase came as customers stockpiled Maker's Mark after the February 9th announcement that its bottling strength would be lowered. That decision was reversed a week later after complaints from consumers. Shattuck says the short-term gains from the first quarter are not sustainable, but there is enough whiskey on hand to maintain a solid rate of growth through pricing and market allocation. Translated, the price is going up and it won't be as available as it was before. Maker's wasn't the only high-performing brand for Beam during the quarter. Lafroig sales rose 27%, Basil Hayden gained 16%, Canadian Club 8%, and Knob Creek 3%. Jim Beam sales fell by 2%, Kilbeggan was off 30%, and Teachers sales dropped 20% as the company fights bribery allegations in India. By the way, Beam is giving Lafroig a facelift. Nothing's changing inside the bottle, but the packaging will be changed to give the entire range a consistent look. You can see a photo of the new look at the WhiskeyCast website. In other Scotch whiskey news, the Macallan is releasing the final three expressions in its new 1824 series of no age statement single malts. The Macallan Gold came out last fall, and like the Gold, the Ruby, Amber, and Sienna are named based on the natural colors from the casks. Macallan whiskey maker Bob Delgarno was able to pick casks that created consistent colors in the spirit. It's also a return to tradition for the Macallan, since all four expressions are sherry cask matured. Stuart McPherson is the Macallan's master of wood.
Basically, we've used the same type of casks for a number of years through the same suppliers. And I think this was the challenge that Bob had, was to use the casks and the stock that he had available to create this new range. I think he's done a fantastic job.
How do you make it so that it's easy to keep those colors consistent over time? How do you manage those casks?
Well, we've as I said before, we've dealt with the same suppliers. We know the provenance of the process. We're probably the only distiller's company to actually have the source of the trees from the regions of Astoria, Galicia and Cantabria, and that whole process from the sawmills in Lugo down to the construction of the casks in Jerez to then ultimately the seasoning in the bodegas and then over to Scotland to be filled. So, you know, we know the history, we know the bodegas that have been filled and warehoused in, we know the dry Oloroso sherries that they're using. So we are confident, you know, going forward that we can create the whiskey and the spirit that we require.
The 1824 series Macallans will be available in Europe, Canada, Latin America, and Africa, and will replace the current sherry oak Macallans in those markets. The age statement malts will still be available in the U.S. and key Asian markets for the long-term future. Bonhams held its first New York whiskey auction of the year this week. Vintage Macallans led the bidding. A 50-year-old Macallan anniversary bottle brought the highest bid of $40,460, while a 1949 Millennium decanter sold for $19,040, and a 57-year-old Macallan Lalique decanter went for $15,470. The auction also featured a number of rare bourbons and American whiskeys, along with a bottle of the first George Washington's vatted American whiskey. It was one of 250 produced to mark the restoration of the distillery at Mount Vernon, with whiskeys from 11 different distilleries blended together. That bottle sold for just under $1,200. It's been almost 2 years now since Ian McLeod Distillers bought Tamdhu Distillery in Speyside out of mothballs from the Edrington Group. Today, Tamdhu released its first single malts under the new management during a rare distillery open day at the Spirit of Speyside Festival. The 10-year-old Tamdhu is bottled at 40% ABV and matured in ex-sherry casks. And there's a limited edition 10-year-old that was matured exclusively in first fill ex-sherry casks. It's bottled at 46% ABV. Only 1,000 bottles of the limited edition version will be available. One of the most unusual whiskey shops in Scotland has been sold. Richard Joynson and his wife Lindsay have sold Lochfine Whiskies in Inverary to Glencure Holdings, which owns the whiskey shop chain of specialist stores in the UK. Lochfine has been known over the years as much for its irreverent nature as for its whiskey selection, and the whiskey shop's management says there are no plans to change that. As for Richard and his wife, they said goodbye to their customers and friends in an email this week. Their short-term plans include gardening leave and boating, but whiskey won't be in their long-term future, which is a loss for the rest of us. And finally, a lot of new whiskeys get released with great fanfare, but the Glenlivet is trying to keep us guessing with its latest release. The Glenlivet Alpha went on sale this week. It's in a black bottle, so we can't see the color. The label only reads, "From the Glenlivet Distillery," with just enough additional language to keep the regulators happy, and it's bottled at 50% ABV. The rest of the story? Well, right now that's all being kept secret inside Chivas Brothers. The plans are to tell the world 6 weeks from now exactly what Alpha is. By then, most, if not all, of the 3,350 bottles available worldwide will likely have been sold. You can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at WhiskeyCast.com. But for now, that's the week's news.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Help us select the next Glenmorangie single malt whiskey with the Glenmorangie Caskmasters project. Sign up online through the Glenmorangie Facebook page or on glenmorangie.com.
Just a reminder, next weekend I'll be in Toronto for the annual Spirit of Toronto Whiskey Festival. Tickets are still available at the festival's website, but the tickets for my tasting session are all sold out. If you're going to be there, please make sure you stop me to say hello. I'd love to meet you. Now, this is something I wish I'd done in time for Mother's Day next weekend, but we're offering a special on prints from the WhiskeyCast Photo Gallery now through Father's Day. Between now and June 16th, every print in the Art of Whiskey Gallery is 15% off, including all of the large panoramic prints. Just add a print to your shopping cart, you'll see the discount when you check out. If you want to give or receive a print as a Father's Day gift, the deadline to order for international shipping is May 20th, and North American orders can be placed by May 31st. And by the way, I'd like to thank Greg McElhenney and the folks at Calumet Photographic in Philadelphia. They had my photos on display in their gallery space starting last November and kept on extending the display several times until the end of April, finally, a lot longer than we'd originally planned. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Highland Park. I got an email from Michael Blaum this week. "Hi, where did you get that Valinche to extract whiskey from the cask in the opening segment of your WhiskeyCast HD videos? I can't seem to find one." Well, Michael, I've never been able to find one outside of a distillery either. That was shot a couple of years ago at King Car Distillery in Taiwan with Ian Chang pulling a cask sample. I've been trying to find a vintage Valinche, which is also known as a whiskey thief, for a long time now. Vendome Copper in Louisville does make them, but only sells to licensed distilleries. Benjamin Herrera posted this note on our Facebook page. "Hey, Mark, I have a question and a request. Request first. I'm running my second half marathon this year on June 2nd and was hoping you could make sure that weekend's whiskey cast will be finished and up before then. Maybe the virtual tasting, too. I like listening to the show on my runs and would love to start the race with some whiskey cast. Question now. Any chance you'd be willing to visit Colorado in September for the Colorado Distillers Festival held in Denver? With all of the distilleries in Colorado, I'm sure it would be a great trip for the show and an opportunity to see a great state with some great whiskey. If you have any interest in a shameless plug for myself, check out my blog about the event last year. I would love to see you there." Well, Benjamin, first off, good luck on that half marathon. I'll try to make sure that weekend's episode is ready in time for the starting gun. As for the festival, I already have a tentative commitment that weekend, but if things change, I'll see if it might be possible to come out to Denver. There's also a link to Benjamin's blog post on our Facebook page if you'd like to find out more about the event. If there's something you'd like to share with other whiskey lovers, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at the WhiskeyCast website or on our Facebook page. You can also email me. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com, and the comments of the week are brought to you this time around by Highland Park.
My name is Daryl Haldane, Global Brand Advocate for Highland Park. Go onto our website at highlandpark.co.uk and upload your photo at Inner Circle to have your face on the walls of the Highland Park Distillery.
Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Simon Brooking of Laphroaig has a couple of events this coming week in Charlotte, North Carolina, along with Fred Noe of Jim Beam, Bill Samuels Jr. of Maker's Mark, Dan Tolio of Canadian Club, and Kieran Folliard of Two Gingers. You can find all of the details on the calendar of events at WhiskeyCast.com. Meanwhile, Kensington Wine Market in Calgary has a rare malts tasting on May 8th. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's U.S. chapter has its final single malt extravaganza of the spring on the 9th in Denver. There's a whiskey festival featuring independent bottlers May 9th through the 11th in Gerardsbergen, Belgium. Of course, the Spirit of Toronto Festival is on the 11th, as I mentioned earlier, along with the second Saturday single malt tasting at the Miner's Delight Inn in Atlantic City, Wyoming. Woodford Reserve has a Mother's Day brunch at the distillery in Versailles, Kentucky on the 12th. And this coming weekend is also the Loch Ness Whiskey Festival at the Fiddler's Inn in Drumnadrochit, Scotland. Right now, there are more than 320 whiskey events on the searchable calendar at whiskeycast.com. You're bound to find one near you. The calendar of events is brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at laphroaig.com. And while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay.
Whiskeycast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Kevin O'Gorman, master of maturation, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
It's the combination of two barrels together that impart a lot of the flavour for the Redbreast. You have the Oloroso sherry imparts a sort of a sherry note, a nice sweet note to the Redbreast. And then on the other side, you have the American barrel, which gives lovely toasted wood, a sort of vanilla, a bit of sweetness. And really, it's about combining these two casts together that make up the Redbreast that produces such a fantastic whiskey.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
WhiskeyCast In Depth is brought to you by Woodford Reserve. Back to our top story of the week now. Fred and Stuart Lang broke up their 40-year partnership at Douglas Lang & Company this week. They inherited the company from their father, Fred Lang, who founded it in 1948. Before we hear from the brothers about the split, I want to start off with some historical perspective. Let's go all the way back now to January of 2009, when I talked with Fred Lang at the Victoria Whiskey Festival about his brother Stuart and their children.
Uncle Santi and my aunt Helen, who owned the Brookladdy Distillery and Blaidnock Distillery back in the 50s and 60s, were great friends commercially and on a personal basis with my mum and dad, so much that Uncle Sandy and my dad shared the ownership of different racehorses. I don't think they ever won much, but they had great days out on it. And they were very, very close. And one night through late 1950, Uncle Sandy and Aunt Helen invited my mum and dad out for dinner at the famous old 101 restaurant in Glasgow. And after copious amounts of drink, which was, the norm in these days, Uncle Sandy turned to my mother and said, Morag, we have got something very important to tell you or to ask you. You know, Helen and I cannot have children. You've got Stuart already and you've just had a wee Freddie born. We would like to make you an offer. We want to exchange wee Freddie for the Brookladdy Distillery. Well, your listeners can't gauge just how good looking I am today, but certainly as a baby I was bonny, and my mum did not allow the exchange to take place. But certainly to this day my brother Stuart is mad as hell that the exchange did not take place. He could have killed two birds with one stone on that basis.
Now, tell me your best story about your brother then.
Oh gosh, hey, hey, you're going to catch me on that one. That's a tough one. This isn't live just now, is it?
Unfortunately, yes, it is.
No, I have no idea. Not one that I can repeat anyway. And not without being abnormally rude about him, in the same way he would probably be abnormally rude about me. Having lived with him and worked with him, gosh, he's 62, 63, and I'm 58, 59, going on 59. We know each other in and out. We know our strengths and weaknesses, and I know yours, Stuart. But essentially, no, blood is thicker than water, and I'm not going to blow the gaff on him.
Now, speaking of blood being thicker than water, what's the plans for the next generation of Langs?
Well, the kids are going to have to get their act together if they ever consider taking over our roles once we pop our clogs. Although we're 58 and 63 respectively, Stuart and I, bottom line is we're running the company quite well ourselves. We're quite aggressive out in the marketplace. My own daughter's got a role with the famous Mr. Patterson, amongst others, at White Mackay as the brand ambassador for Jura. Stu's got a couple of boys who are doing different roles. I don't believe they're whiskey oriented, but it is a consideration that we will have to address, but just not immediately.
Well, 4 years later, Fred and Stuart Lang have addressed it by splitting Douglas Lang and Company in two. As I mentioned earlier, Fred keeps the Douglas Lang name along with half of the whiskey stocks and brands, and has brought his daughter Kara into the business to head up marketing. Stuart has taken his half, which includes the bottling hall, and has formed Hunter Lang and Company with his sons Andrew and Scott. They're folding their Edition Spirits whiskey business into the family's new firm. I talked separately with both Fred and Stuart Lang after the official announcement on Wednesday, and to be completely fair, I flipped a coin to see which brother would go first. Stuart Lang won the toss. From your end, tell me what happened.
What happened? We have demerged. We have
after 40 years.
Oh, longer than
the family business.
Yeah, longer than 40 years. My father started the company in 48. I joined in 64, and have left in 2013. A super period of time for me. Thoroughly enjoyed it. 47 basically years, of which I think I was a director for at least 45 of them. But as in all things and all ways of life, families have different views, and my brother and I had different views as to the way forward. And basically, on the basis of that, we decided that, look, the better way forward here is to demerge and literally do our own things. And from my point of view, and I think from Fred's point of view, I'm lucky. I've got two sons, and both of whom are in the whiskey business with their own whiskey company at Edition Spirits, and they've done well for themselves. And for me, at my age, it's a tremendous opportunity now to work with my sons. My dad had the opportunity of working with his sons, and now I'm pleased to say I've got the opportunity of working with mine. So it will be the third generation and the new Lang brothers as such.
And this is a case of where essentially it worked out succession for both sides of the family, essentially.
Exactly, exactly. All done in good spirit, and no difficulty and no animosity. And indeed, without coming ahead of any questions that you might have later on, to give you an indication of that, Fred at Douglas Lang is continuing to bottle with us at what is now our warehouse, which is Premier in the north of in the southeast of Glasgow.
I was about to ask that. How did you guys wind up splitting up the assets? I know that the brands were split up and the casks were essentially split up 50-50, but how did you wind up splitting up all the other assets and letting the staff at Douglas Lang decide which one of you they wanted to go along
with?
Well,
there was an element of that, certainly. The staff were given free rein to do as they wished for whatever reason that they had. And I'm pleased to say that I got, by and large, the staff that I wanted to come with me. The assets, the obvious assets like cash assets and particularly the stock, was pretty easy. It was literally a 50-50 split. And that was straightforward. The brands were the subject of negotiation, and in part of the brand negotiation, the company name came into it. So without going into the particular details, it was all resolved amicably and correctly.
But you didn't get to keep the Douglas Lang name. Your company is now going to be called Hunter Lang.
We are indeed, right? Hunter Lang, yes.
What's the origin of that?
Well, my name is Stuart Hunter Lang, and I thought it might be rather pretentious to call the new company Stuart Lang. So we settled for Hunter Lang, which in any event is a good Scottish name, and we believe it's a good, strong Scottish name.
Now, how did you wind up picking the brands that you wanted? Because you got out of this the old malt cask and the old and rare.
I did.
Which were sort of the two flagships in the single cask range at Douglas Lang.
Well, nothing's changed. They are still the same flagship whiskies for Hunter Lang. Whiskey coming from the same stock. Obviously, the same customers will continue to buy. Their loyalty is to the brand. Their loyalty is not to Fred or to Stuart. So we're very fortunate that we've got it. Fred got Big Pete, which is what he wanted. I'm very happy with what I got in terms of, as you mentioned, OMC, Old Malt Cask and Old and Rare, with Douglas Silver Mlanrig. And in terms of the blend, our John Player Special and House of Peers and Langside brands. So, plus, of course, we got the bottling hall in Glasgow. So we're both happy, or we're both unhappy. It's eeksy-peeksy.
There's got to be some sadness for you here, though, right?
A huge amount of emotion for me. I mean, as you, I've told you how long I've been with Douglas Lane, and of course it was my father's name, etc., etc., etc. Yes, it is. It's sad. But like life, I've always wanted and tended to look forward rather than look back. And I'm having a tremendous opportunity to work with my sons, which I gratefully accept, and truly looking forward to it. It's given me that extra spring in my step, and I'm really, really looking forward to it.
How important was it to you to have something for your sons to take over?
Quite a lot, because basically between the boys, and indeed I've got a daughter, between the boys they would have had less than 25% of Douglas Lane & Company by the time it was passed on down the line. And coming this way, they're going to have a long future working together, because they're young enough. They've got another 30, 40 years in them. And to me, that's very satisfying that one way or the other, we've been able to come to a conclusion that they're going to be left something worthwhile.
Can you foresee a day 30, 40 years down the road where they may split up Hunter Lang & Company between them?
I couldn't foresee a day 40 years ago when Stuart and Fred would have split up. But they are very close. They work very well together. Who knows, Mark? But I don't, at this distance, I really don't believe so.
Do you think they learned any lessons, though, from watching the way that you and Fred handled this that may help them if this ever happens to them?
I think they would, yes. They're a couple of intelligent boys. I have little doubt that this experience will have been of great interest to them, and they will remember it in years to come when Fred and I are about memories in the long distance.
Now, the key question I have is, how did you decide, how did the distribution agreements work? Because you had, obviously, both brands are being distributed by the same companies mm-hmm. in a lot of markets around the
yep.
world. Will those agreements stay in place, at least for the short term?
Or no.
How did that work out?
Well, until there's a real reason not to have the same distribution agreements, albeit now split up between Douglas Lang and Hunter Lang & Company, the customers are happy because, as I mentioned, they're loyal to the brand. And obviously there are logistical problems if we're consolidating shipments or not. But it was actually much easier than might appear to be the case.
Will this give you more flexibility in terms of creating new brands, in terms
yeah.
of expanding your distribution
yes.
for the whiskies you took on?
Yes, very much. We're working in a number of areas at the moment with new customers in new areas. And also I'm conscious that we cannot stand still, and we don't want to stand still, and there are a number of what I believe are interesting projects coming to completion in terms of new brands and new presentations, and that should be within the next 3 months. We should be able to make a launch of these particular whiskies.
Which markets are you going to focus on outside of the UK? Where are you going to be focusing your energy in terms of exports?
Well, historically, we've worked in Japan and Taiwan, particularly Thailand, Singapore. Both my boys have worked in the Far East, and one of them has worked in the Middle East. We're also in discussions with one major distributor with outlets around the world, and we're hoping to come to a happy conclusion on that one very quickly. Russia continues to be an area and market of great interest, and indeed in 10 days time I'll be in Central America meeting again our Mexican importers and other importers from other Central American countries. And that for us has historically not been a good market in terms of the kind of whiskies that we offer, but it's growing and the interest is there. And importantly, the background for whiskey is there, and indeed yep. the money is there.
Now, where are you going to put your energy in terms of brand development? Are you going to focus on the single malt side, the single cask side, or the blended scotch side?
I think we have to focus on our strength, and our perceived strength from our point of view is a single cask, single malt business. Blend is fine, but we're not prime producers of blend. and therefore we're never going to be the cheapest in town. And that's a pretty competitive market out there with all the big boys. So it's going to be the single malts that will carry the company forward in particular.
What do you think it's going to be like the first time you're at a whiskey festival and Fred's at a booth across from you and you're for Hunter Lang and he's there for Douglas Lang?
Yeah, you have a very imaginative mind. Once the blood has been sorted out, it'll be absolutely fine. There's not going to be any problem, Mark, I assure you. None at all. It will be unusual. It will be strange. But to be very honest with you, I'm not liable to be at quite so many whiskey festivals now. I prefer to maybe travel and meet importers and potential new clients than actually do. I've done my stint. I've done 40 years of exhibitions, or maybe not 40 years now, because, of course, that's how long I've been doing business. But how long have we had whiskey exhibitions? When was Whiskey Live first started in London? 15 years ago, perhaps?
Something like
20
that.
Years ago. So I've been around a few exhibitions in my life, and I will still continue to be, but not nearly as much as I have been doing in the past.
I was thinking more of just good-natured kidding between the two of
you. Oh, yeah, there will be. But we're both equally, you know, we're business-focused, like you, and there was always good banter between us. And again, I don't see any reason why there won't be in the future.
Fred echoed his brother's comments on the amicable nature of the split. In fact, he says making the move now helped keep it friendly.
Nothing specifically happened. It's been part of my agenda and a number of discussions that have taken place over the last 8 to 10 years. You know, as Stuart and I creep into our dotage, that's me 62 now. It's a young and vital 62. I've still got a lot of life and a lot of kicks in me still. But essentially, as you reach into the 60s and early 60s, you have to take it on board that you're not going to be here forever. I always wanted the kids into the business in the third generation. And from my own point of view, always felt it was absolutely necessary to have the children come into the company with outside, real-life, independent experience. Tara brings that, and from that point of view, I've got to say, within Douglas Lang Company, she's going to be a fabulous addition. Stuart and I are different. We bring different styles of business, different requirements of our business. And so, really, there had to be a parting of the ways, not totally comfortably, because having worked with him for, gosh, what must be 40 years plus, there is an element of wrench. But we're also in business, so I've got to think of the commercial realities. And so there's a situation that has been developing slowly over the last few years, and sooner or later, there had to come a crunch moment. From your point of view, it's a crunch moment. From our point of view, it's been a combination of different meetings over the last few years as we draw it all together. So it's actually been quite carefully, strategically planned behind the scenes.
Is it an amicable split between the two of you?
Yeah, my brother and I will still see ourselves having dinner out together. We're obviously currently competitors. It probably by going the route we have gone just now, we have diffused a situation that might have spun out of control. So as we signed off the documents yesterday, we shook hands, and we had been talking quite brotherly through the meeting itself. So look, there will be times when we go head to head, but similarly, working with your brother over 40 years, there are times that I have gone head to head with him within the company. So brotherly competition, I think, is going to be quite healthy between us.
And to be fair, he was able to bring his sons into his side of the company too, right?
Absolutely.
And they also had the same outside experience that Kara has, so it works out well for both of you, and that way there's no issues for the third generation, right?
Well, you in turn have to check that out with Stuart and his boys. Look, I can speak for Douglas Lang, for Fred, and for Kara. Stuart's a big boy, and his boys will, I'm sure, speak for themselves.
Oh, of course. How did you guys decide who got which brands, and more importantly, who got which casks out of the warehouses?
The casks was an easier split. We have basically split the casks 50-50, where there were uneven quantities of different ages and different hot distilleries like Old Macallan's or Old Port Ellen's. We alternated, and if I took a couple of casks of Macallan, Stuart would take a cask of Port Ellen. So it's that was one of the easier ones. Obviously, from a personal point of view, the splitting of the brands was for me like chopping off my arm in some instances. Old Malt Cask was the brand that started for us the movement away from the premium blended scotches into the single cask route. I still got some of the rough sketches of how I envisaged the brand being put together and the selection of malts that we thought we would be working with from 11, 12 years ago. But essentially, there were a couple of hard decisions that had to be made. If I wanted to hold on to Big Pete, which is for us currently a real stormer with great potential, and currently it's probably our second biggest selling brand within the previous Douglas Lane portfolio. So if I wanted that best one, Stuart had to get his next choice, and so it was split thereafter, almost by dint of what did you want next. If he took a brand like Old and Rare, which is what Stuart has got, I would pick up a couple of other brands like Double Barrel, Premier Barrel. So in actual fact, it was split mathematically based on value to the company and profitability to the company. So I ended up with a larger number of brands. Some of them, like my King of Scots, my personal favorite blended Scotch whiskey, much underutilized by Douglas Lang and company over the last 25 or 30 years. But for me, since I started working with the company, the brand name I've always wanted to really do something with. And Cara feels similarly a much underutilized blended brand name. So we want to bring some focus back onto the blended Scotch with the King of Scots. Big Peter's is a massive focus for us. And sorry, one other thing, as I talk of Big Pete, just to go back to the stock question, the stock for Big Pete is very specialized, totally Islay in style. No, not totally Islay in style, totally Islay. And on that particular basis, I had to have a special set of discussions with Stuart to buy back the stock of Islays that we put into to Big Pete. He had no requirement for an Islay vatted malt. So from that point of view, that was a separate set of the discussions. But fascinating, and we're talking not just over a few months. Some of these discussions have been going on literally for 11, 12, 13 months to get to this point now.
And you're not just going to rest on these. I know you're planning at least a new line of single malts and to expand on what you already have, right?
Hey, having lost a brand which for me is very close to my heart, be assured that we're going after that same business. We already have been working behind the scenes. Cara has been working remotely for the last couple of months since she left Morrison Bowmore Distillers. On that particular basis, we are further ahead with brand development for the new brand, and I'm not going to give you the name of it just yet, but we're so far down the line that this morning we actually finalized the copy for the back panel and the back label. So all the details are really very much now in place. We're at the stage now of getting quotations from the label printers and the tube manufacturers. I think with luck and a tailwind, we will have that new brand conceivably into the market much earlier than we budgeted for. We're hoping that we get in there by September with a good selection, and the selection I've just started to look at just now. So we'll be pulling some cask samples. We will be going in very hot with some really attractive malts, we believe. It'd be very nice if we could get into the market with as with as many as 18 or 20 different malts. That will be good if we can hit the market with a decent quantity initially, with a view to building it and building it. When we first went in 12 years ago into the single cask regime, I think we launched with a selection of 4 different malts and slowly built to 8, and then 12, 16, 20. This time we will be much more bullish. We know the market. We know the distilleries that are hot and attractive, and we think we've got a good selection setting up there, beyond which we've got about 3 other brands where the registration has taken place. The design is fairly progressed down the road, and quite expressly through the course of autumn into probably what will run realistically into the early part of 2014, we'll have probably another 3 brands out there. Innovation and NPD is in my blood. It's very much in Cara's blood as well. So ally that to some of the great whiskey stocks that we've got just now, that we continue to lay down with our favourite distilleries. And I think we will probably acknowledge that there will have to be some different blended vats, blended malts, vatted malts, I prefer the terminology of, through the course of the next 15, 18 months. I think we have some nice ideas percolating through there just now, and some good stocks to put into them.
Is it fair to say that Cara is eventually going to run the company?
What I've got to be fully realistic about is that despite her experience, I think she's got to earn her spurs. The reality is that I know there are women in whiskey all the way through. There's a strong movement for more whiskey, women in whiskey. On that particular basis, she's not going to be made a director initially. She's been brought in as head of brands marketing. I think that's a realistic view, a realistic position to enjoy. From my point of view, when I came into the company, I was just a boy, a stripling with very little real life experience that I had gained at White Mackay and White Horse. I was wet behind the ears. I had a lot more to learn. In a family owned business, you're covering all bases, and Cara's got to learn to cover all bases. She loves her whiskey. She loves the spirit itself, and the essence of the business and the community that we're working in. It is certain that, being realistic, she will be the major inheritor of my shareholding. She'll be made a director once she has proven to me she is director material. I'll probably get in a hard time from her for not making her a director immediately, but there's got to be a reality check, and you do not throw directorships out just willy-nilly. So yeah, she will be my inheritor, and I have considerable confidence in her. I think it'll be good, and it won't be the first time, I'm sure, that a lady has run a whiskey business. She's a young lady just now. Once she's a lady, she may be running this business. But so help me, at 62 years of age, I see myself as a young and vital 62. I've still got a lot of squash games, tennis games, and an NPD in me for sure. So watch this space for a wee while.
As you heard, while both brothers are working on several new brands each, they wouldn't give up any details yet. When they do, I'll keep you updated here on WhiskeyCast. That's this week's WhiskeyCast In Depth, brought to you by Woodford Reserve. Discover Woodford Reserve Double Oaked, uniquely matured in 2 separate new white oak barrels, the second deeply toasted and lightly charred for a more complex dimensional flavor. Find out more at WoodfordReserve.com. Be double sure. Drink responsibly. Woodford Reserve Double Oaked, Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, 45.2% alcohol by volume. Woodford Reserve Distillery, Versailles, Kentucky. Since it's Kentucky Derby weekend, I thought I'd focus on bourbons for the What I'm Tasting This Week department. Let's start off with one that you'll only find in Kentucky, and I paid less than $20 for a bottle of it. Ancient, Ancient Age 10-year-old is produced at Buffalo Trace. It's bottled at 43% ABV. The nose has notes of toasted oak, old leather, tobacco, honey, and a hint of chocolate. The taste is smooth and sweet with a good cinnamon spice, honey and caramel sweetness, vanilla, and just a touch of toasted oak.
The finish is smooth and sweet as well, with caramel and molasses notes that linger nicely with just a touch of spice. I'm scoring ancient age 10-year-old in 92, and don't confuse it with the ancient age 10-star whiskey. Four Roses released its annual limited edition single barrel bourbon earlier this month. It's bottled at cask strength and will vary from barrel to barrel. My sample was bottled at 60% ABV. The nose has a great aroma with cocoa and dark chocolate, honey, a smoky campfire touch, and hints of baked apples, too. The taste is rich, thick, and spicy with black pepper that doesn't overwhelm the honey and dark chocolate notes underneath. Notes of baked apples and peaches come out as the pepper fades along with just a hint of smoke. The finish lingers with a good balance between fading pepperiness and soft baked fruit notes. I'm scoring the Four Roses 2013 Limited Edition Single Barrel a 93. And finally, let's look at one of those classics that often gets overlooked. In fact, it's usually stuck on the bottom shelves at many retailers. Old Granddad is bottled at 57% ABV. The nose is full of ginger, tobacco, honey, caramel, and mild touches of clove and orange peel. The taste is chewy and thick with a peppery punch, honey, and caramel notes underneath. And the finish is long and spicy with a slight tartness. I'm scoring Old Granddad 114 and 88. I've added these tasting notes to the more than 950 different whiskeys you'll find at WhiskeyCast.com. That's also where you'll find the calendar of events, the Your Voice page, the pub section with our complete guide of whiskey resources, and the mall featuring the WhiskeyCast photo gallery. Of course, you'll also find a complete archive of past episodes, too. The address again, WhiskeyCast.com. And my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.